Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy Noble. So glad that you took a little bit of time out of your busy schedule to join me on this Thursday edition. I won't disappoint you. Today I have an incredible guest, and she's been on several times before. Her name is Annie Cyrus from Live Up to Freedom, and she works very, very hard about promoting human rights, delivering those who are trapped under Sharia law and the Islamic ideology. And we're going to talk today when she comes on in a half an hour about her recent campaign, the Healing and Hope campaign, for a particular political prisoner named Afshin, who is in exile, and he is suffering from colon cancer and desperately needs our prayers and our support. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. And also, Annie has been busy helping a Bosnian reporter who was attacked online and threatened that they were going to kill her, they were going to run over her, burn her body, simply because she posted something on her Facebook about disagreeing with the Islamic dress, the burqa, the hijab. And so we have a lot of things to cover this morning on The Cross in the Desert. First of all, what I want to say to my dear Iranian friends who have been busy all week in New York protesting Rouhani's speech at the United Nations. I've seen the photographs, the pictures of them standing up against the evil Islamic regime, and I just want to say thank you so much for being great citizens of our country and using your freedom to stand up against the Islamic Republic of Iran and showing the world the true face of who Rouhani is. Since his presidency 3 years ago, 2,700 have been executed. This is far from the claim of being moderate, as he espoused when he first became president, how he is a moderate fighting against all of the fundamentalism. Well, the record states for itself what he stands for. And more of the same: corruption, the executions, the violation of human rights. And my dear Iranian friends have also met with a group of young activists actors and actresses who are dressed up in prison garb, and they're doing a little play showing the world what happened 28 years ago when under Khomeini, 30,000 political prisoners were executed, the greatest crime almost against humanity committed by the Islamic Republic of Iran. And they're bringing that awareness to us who don't know much about what goes on behind the Iron Curtain there in Iran. So thank you to all my dear Iranian friends who are unafraid and unashamed to stand up for what is true. Well, last weekend, the world once again was treated to more terrorist attacks right here on our soil, in New Jersey, in New York, and in Minnesota. Bombs were planted, a stabbing took place in a Minnesota mall, and one particular off-duty police officer stood up to this attack and saved many, many lives. His name is Jason Falconer, and this morning I want to just recognize this brave off-duty police officer who was unafraid to stand up against this threat. Let's listen to this special report.
An off-duty police officer is being hailed a hero after stopping a jihadist knife attacker at a Minnesota mall Saturday night. Nine people were hurt in the knife rampage at a St. Cloud mall after a man asked shoppers if they were Muslim, made references to Allah, then launched a vicious attack. None of the nine victims suffered life-threatening injuries, and all but three had been released from the hospital as of Sunday. Among the injured was a 15-year-old girl, a 50-year-old woman, and seven men aging in age range from 20 to 53. Had an off-duty officer not stepped in, the outcome could have been fatal. The hero who eliminated the threat has been identified as firearms trainer and concealed carry advocate, Officer Jason Falconer. He's an officer at a nearby police department. Falconer opened fire at the suspect, who lunged toward him. At a press conference on Sunday, St. Cloud Mayor David Klies said he believes Falconer prevented additional injuries and loss of life. He added this. He says, clearly he is a hero. Officer Falconer was there at the right time and at the right place. The mayor says the final confrontation could be seen on video from Macy's store surveillance. Klies says in the video, the suspect clearly had a knife in hand and lunged at Falconer, who fired at him. The suspect fell, then got back up three times before the fatal shot.
It was on the people who were injured. And again, we are very grateful that no one lost their life. Thanks to the quick action of a brave off-duty police officer, the suspect was killed, and we avoided more people being hurt. I had a chance also to speak with Governor Dayton this morning. I assured him that we will provide all the assistance that he needs in the investigation. The FBI is investigating the Minnesota incident as a potential act of terrorism.
The suspect behind the alleged terrorism has been identified as 22-year-old Dahir Adan. He emigrated from Africa to the U.S. with his family 15 years ago. Adan was a local Somali community member. Leaders of the Somali American community in St. Cloud gathered Sunday with his family and issued a statement of sympathy for the family and the nine victims of the attack. They also condemned those attacks.
Not in St. Cloud. That's what I kept on telling my kids, not in St. Cloud. But I hope my neighbors, my co-workers, my friends, my community members, my elders, and everybody else will take this into heart. And please, let's spread love instead of hate. And I will say it again, ISIS does not represent us. It does not represent Islam. It does not represent the Somalis. It does not represent anybody of that faith.
An Islamic State-run news agency claims the man who stabbed and wounded the nine people was a, quote, soldier of the Islamic State. Minnesota has the nation's largest Somali community, with census numbers placing the population at 40,000. The community has been a target for terror recruiters in recent years. More than 20 young men have left the state since 2007 to join al-Shabaab in Somalia, and about a dozen have left in recent years to join militants in Syria. Nine Minnesota men face sentencing on terror charges for plotting to join ISIS.
Well, hats off to Jason Falconer, a very alert, off-duty police officer who ended this reign of terror in this Minnesota mall. It's very interesting to me, in light of what's happened this past weekend with the terrorist attacks, that President Obama can stand at the United Nations for his final speech and say that the world is a safer place than it was 5 years ago. That is delusional. That doesn't match with the facts of reality. In fact, if you hear what's going on about the refugees that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama want to bring in from Syria, given the fact of what's happened this past weekend, it is a absolute terrorist attack on our soil to let unvetted Syrian refugees come into our country. I want you to hear this special report. Last weekend, 800 immigrants were granted citizenship to our country, and they were supposed to be deported. You won't believe this story. I want you to hear it right now on the Cross in the Desert.
And there is some political fallout from the terror attacks over the weekend, as both presidential nominees have their own take on how to stop the terrorists. Here's Donald Trump.
These are sick, evil people that want to destroy this country. And the way we coddle them and the way we're afraid to say anything and we're afraid to say what the problem is and who they are, and they don't want to say radical Islam. They don't want to talk about radical Islamic terrorism. Obama won't even say the words, neither will Hillary Clinton.
In the meantime, Hillary Clinton addressing the terror attacks last hour, stressing that we must be vigilant but not afraid.
I've been very clear. We're going after the bad guys, and we're going to get them. But we're not going to go after an entire religion and give ISIS exactly what it's wanting in order for them to enhance their position.
A stark contrast. Joining us now, Brett Baer, anchor of Special Report. Brett, we want to talk about politics, of course, because here we are just a few weeks away from electing the next president. But it is tough, isn't it, to talk about politics when there are people still in the hospital from some of these attacks over the weekend. How do you see just the political conversation as we head into this new week?
Yeah, obviously the concern, Jenna, is the law enforcement and getting to the bottom of what happened in all of these incidents. But you're right, politics is very much a part of it because it's a number one concern for a lot of people, national security, terrorism. Interesting to see the tone and tenor of Hillary Clinton change a little bit from last night when we saw her address these incidents on the plane with reporters, and today, much more forceful, but still having that message that Donald Trump paints with a broad brush when it comes to fighting terrorism. I think that this is going to be a key element of the debate 1 week from tonight.
It'll be interesting to see. Her language, we're going to smash ISIS. I haven't heard that sort of language from Hillary Clinton before.
Yeah, she's been far more measured, or she was last night as well. I think that emotion, identifying the threat and that it's real and how it feels to people at home, is something that Donald Trump has done effectively through the primary and continues to do, and we'll see how effectively in the general election.
We'll also be watching from the president today. Brett, what do you make of the fact that we haven't heard from the president so far?
Well, I think it's significant. I don't know whether it's a political decision to let Hillary Clinton go out first. This administration has been reluctant, at least, to get ahead of calling something terrorism. Sometimes they are actually well behind calling it terrorism, as we've seen in many times before. The breaking news today, Jenna, is about a report by the internal inspector general of the Department of Homeland Security, just out, in which it says some 858 people who were set to be deported, immigrants set to be deported from what they call special interest countries. These are countries that are of concern for national security to the United States. They were, according to this report, mistakenly given citizenship because the fingerprints were not on file and they were using different dates of birth, and they managed to get through. 858. They say at least that many. They also point out that these people could potentially serve in law enforcement and have security clearance, and that there's an ongoing investigation. This fits, Jenna, into what the concern about screening immigrants coming into the country, let alone Syrian refugees. But this is an internal DHS report in this administration.
Right. We're going to have to go. I only have about 30 seconds here. But just to underscore that point, these were people that were set to be deported, right? These were not just we lost track of them. We as a government wanted to deport these individuals that were granted citizenship.
They had final deportation orders, and yet they were granted citizenship, naturalized citizens. And, you know, it just fits in with the news. We don't know the background of this guy in New York, but he is a naturalized citizen from Afghanistan. And it's interesting that this report comes out today from the DHS IG.
Well, it gives us a lot to talk about and to think about. Brett, great to see you as always. See you tonight.
Okay. See you, John.
It is mind-boggling, isn't it? 800 immigrants that were supposed to be deported have suddenly, boom, poof, magically become citizens. It's frightening. I want you to hear now from Dr. Sebastian Gorka, who wrote the incredible book, Defeating Jihad. He was on with Sean Hannity to discuss the events of this past weekend and how this fits into this dangerous scenario with Obama and Clinton not willing to call this radical Islam. I want you to hear this special report right now on the Cross in the Desert.
Plans for extreme vetting for refugees and immigrants who want to enter the U.S. Here now, the author of Defeating Jihad, The Winnable War, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. So, Clapper, Comey, Brennan, if you look at the names, Steinbeck, McCall, General Allen, all said ISIS will infiltrate. Trump is listening, and he's saying, okay, if they're going to infiltrate, we better vet them to keep Americans safe. Why is Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama willing to gamble with the lives of Americans? Because that's what they're doing. Why would they be willing to do that?
It's part of their ideology, Sean. Remember, these are people that are shaped by the one world multiculturalism. These are postmodern secularists, and they think, you know, it's unfair to close our borders. We had the former Secretary of Homeland Security state recently that our borders should be porous. There should be no such thing as airtight borders. It's not about national security, Sean. It's about ideology. It's about one world multiculturalism.
Well, what is the ideology except that if you don't listen to these top intelligence officials saying, yeah, ISIS will infiltrate, then if they come in and they kill Americans, then don't you bear part of the responsibility for those Americans that are victims of whatever terror attack they bring with them?
As we've discussed before, Sean, reality is optional on the left. It's not about truth. It's about their narrative. Look at this weekend. We've had 11 devices deployed. Only a handful of them exploded, but 11 devices were deployed, IEDs. How many people have to walk around America with shrapnel in their bodies? How many people have to be killed or maimed until they say, yes, there is a threat? ISIS said they're going to use refugee streams, and you know what? They've done it in Europe.
So let me ask you this. We know there are 88 Sharia courts in Great Britain. We know the no-go zones are real. I don't care how many times liberal press says they're not existent when they are. We know what happened. Look at what happened with Angela Merkel. I mean, her party was destroyed in the elections. Add to that Belgium, add to that Sweden, add to that all of Europe, and the impact that this is having, you know, the Islamization of Europe. So I guess with 50 days to go, we're going to elect a president that either acknowledges radical Islam, that will vet these refugees to keep Americans safe, build a wall and protect our borders, or we won't. So the American people have a very clear choice, don't they, in 50 days?
Sean, this has become a national security election. I believe in my heart the majority of Americans, when they walk into that polling booth, will be making this decision. Which person is going to protect me and my family? Is it Donald Trump, who's declared war on the Islamists, or is it Hillary Clinton, who until the Nice attack wouldn't even use the word jihad to describe our enemies?
She's still using, you know, playing word games and threading a needle and is afraid and doesn't want to hurt people's feelings. But all right, Dr. Gorka, always good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
And up next tonight, right here on this busy news night on Hannity.
It's just an amazing man, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, who really educates us about the real problems that are happening all over the world because of jihadists and who want to infiltrate the Syrian refugee population as well and bring more terrorist attacks to our American soil. And he's right. This is a national security election. And it's very clear to me that Donald Trump loves our country. He wants to build the wall. He wants to make us safer. It's a no-brainer who you should vote for. If you vote for Hillary, you are inviting more terrorist attacks into this country. It's very, very clear to me. I want you to hear now, before Annie Cyrus comes on, a very special interview from a very incredible lady, Pamela Geller from Atlas Shrugged, who has educated us along with Robert Spencer and many more, about the dangers of jihadism and Islamism and radical Islamism. I want you to hear what she says about this mass migration happening in Europe and what it means for us here on American soil. This is about an 8-minute interview on America One News. This is Pamela Geller on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
Page two now. Team Obama's push to import Syrian refugees to American soil. The president will address the United Nations Tuesday, making his pitch on the global refugee crisis. The summit aims to encourage world leaders to accept a new flood of migrants at taxpayer expense.
One hallmark event that the president will convene while he's there is an international gathering of world leaders to discuss what countries around the world can do to address the refugee crisis. There are too few countries around the world that are bearing a significant burden in the form of hundreds of thousands, and in some cases even millions, of individuals who fled their home country to try to avoid violence. And there's more that the international community and that the world must do to help those countries bear that burden. We've ramped up the number of refugees that have been admitted to this country over the last couple of years. We've done that without cutting corners when it comes to our national security. Refugees who enter the United States continue to be the most vetted group of individuals that enter the United States. The United States is also the largest bilateral donor of humanitarian assistance to try to meet the needs of those who are fleeing violence. So the United States has done a lot, but we believe that there's more that the international community can do to respond to this situation. That's something that the president will talk about with his counterparts at the United Nations. The president will also give a speech to the UN General Assembly. I believe that's scheduled for Tuesday morning. And the president will use that speech to talk about some of the progress that we have made in unifying the international community to take on some significant threats.
Secretary of State John Kerry says the U.S. has committed $5.5 billion so far to the effort, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Joining me now from New York City, president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative and the Stop Islamization of America, Pamela Geller. Pamela, Obama wants to increase the number of refugees resettled in the U.S. by 29% in the fiscal year of 2017. We know that there is no proper way to vet these people coming in because that's what the FBI said. Isn't this troubling? Why are we doing this?
It's deeply disturbing. Look, in February 2015, the Islamic State boasted that it would soon flood Europe with as many as 500,000 Muslim migrants. And the Lebanese education minister said in September 2015 that there were 20,000 jihadis already among the refugees in the camps in his country. Meanwhile, 80% of the migrants coming into Europe that are claiming to be from Syria are not from Syria at all. First of all, how do you vet when ISIS has the passport machine so these are legitimate documents? And how do you vet if the Obama administration cannot distinguish between a peaceful Muslim and a jihadi, how exactly are they vetting? We know that the jihadis behind the Brussels attacks, by the Paris attacks, came in through the migration into Europe. Ahmed al-Mohammed and other jihadis who murdered 130 people in Paris in November last year had entered Europe as refugees. I mean, this is devoid of logic, of reason. It is deeply dangerous. They are thwarting attacks in France every day, according to the Prime Minister, Manuel Valls. Every day. They have music festivals, and they have these concerts and these outdoor programs where girls are systematically molested, raped every single time. Why is Obama doing this? He's a Marxist globalist internationalist who was raised as a Muslim. Talk about a toxic combo. He doesn't care about Americans. He wants to label national boundaries and all differences between people in pursuit of his Marxist equality utopia.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, and that is something a lot of people are afraid to say. And, you know, I thank you for speaking and not being afraid, and that's probably why you're on CARE's hit list. But a group of House Republicans actually want to defund Obama's Syrian refugee plan, and I'm just surprised that this hasn't been done yet. And also, wouldn't it be cheaper? Because we know that there are innocent people that need to be saved. They need help. It would be cheaper to build safe zones in Syria, wouldn't it be?
Clearly. I mean, look, the real refugee problem, the real refugee crisis took place in 2012. My organization and the international arms of my organization, SIA and SION, Staff Islamization of Nations, issued a call to the UN and President Obama to issue emergency asylum to the Christians who were in jeopardy of being slaughtered. They did nothing. The UN and the Obama administration did nothing. The Christians were slaughtered en masse. Religious minorities were slaughtered en masse. Millions in Iraq and Syria were slaughtered while Obama backed the jihadists, Free Syrian Army or what have you, whatever name they morphed into. The fact is, he's now importing the perps. Where was the West with the Christians?
Yeah, you're touching on something here, and that is the Christians are the ones who need the most help, and we've brought in less than 1%. Why? It's 99% Muslims. Also, you know, a lot, you touched on something else, and this is France's terror problem. A lot of people are wondering, will the U.S. turn into France? Will we start to see these, you know, terror attacks every single day if we continue to go down Obama's path?
It's not speculative. It's very easy to understand. The level of Muslim immigration is directly tied to the level of conflict in a particular country. Best explained by Peter Hammond in his book, at 2%, what one can expect at 5%, what one can expect at 10%, and so on and so on. The increasing Islamization of a country. Of course, we can expect it. We're thwarting jihad attacks every day. There are jihad arrests here in the country. Of course, the enemy media doesn't report on them. And when they do, they assign some random motive. For a very long time, the motive was lone wolves. The problem was these lone wolves were traveling in such wolf packs, that it didn't make sense anymore. There are no lone wolves in the global jihad. The president of Turkey said, he off quotes the poem, the mosque are our fortresses, the minarets are our bayonets, the domes are helmets, and the Muslim faithful are soldiers. I mean, there it is. It's not a question. So this denial of reality is what landed us in this precarious state that we are in now. And the idea that Obama wants to increase the refugee quota to 250,000 people is just shocking. Why isn't GOP successful? Because the enemy media is painting this as some lovely thing. We're going to be able to welcome these orphans, Obama's orphans. Meanwhile, we find out yesterday, you know, the Swedes are saying that 40% of the children are actually like 40 years old. There's a complete disconnect from reality. And I will tell you that people are not prepared for what's coming.
Yeah, I think people are pretty clueless. And the mainstream media is covering this up. And also something that you don't hear a lot about is that the FBI is already tracking 1,000 people in the U.S. with ties to the Islamic State. This is a very serious situation, and Americans need to pay attention to it. Thank you for your time.
Well, and Pamela Geller has just introduced many, many very important statistics. American One News, that was an interview she had just a couple of weeks ago. These are statistics we need to pay attention to because they're very accurate and they're very right on to what's happening. And we see this past weekend, once again, bombs strategically placed in New York, New Jersey, attacks in a mall in Minnesota. And then Pamela is pointing out that this is a concerted effort by ISIS. 20,000 committed terrorists among these refugees, and most of them are not even from Syria, and we have no way of knowing where they're from. And she is sounding the alarm, And of course, she's on the hit list of all those that support this kind of effort, that are so completely disengaged from reality to see what is happening to our country. And there is an agenda, just like what's going on in Charlotte. Don't you know that that is funded by George Soros? And everything that's happening has a certain agenda. I want to welcome right now a very special lady who has been on my program before. And this is Annie Cyrus from Live Up to Freedom. And thank you so much, Annie. And welcome to The Cross in the Desert. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Randy. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm just always excited to have you on because I know we're going to talk about a lot of things that people need to hear about. You have been so busy with your foundation, Live Up to Freedom. You've been busy helping a very special individual we're going to talk about in a few minutes named Afshin. He is a political prisoner in exile. He is suffering from, I believe, colon cancer, and you've reached out to him. We're going to talk about him. But I want to start out our conversation today because we just heard from Pamela Geller giving us some statistics about how these refugees that are coming to our country are so infiltrated. And she is really giving us a lot to think about, Annie. This past weekend, as I'm sure you're aware of, we had once again attacks on our American soil in New Jersey, in New York, a stabbing incident in Minnesota. Now, on Tuesday, our beloved President Obama, speaking before the United Nations Assembly, quote, says that our world is a safer place, a more safer place than 5 years ago. Can you believe that, Annie? I'd like to hear your feedback on that comment from Obama.
To be honest, I'm not surprised he said that. He said the same sentence when he went forward with the Iran nuclear deal. He said this deal just made the whole world a safer place. You see, my understanding is that him being a Muslim, to him safe means chaotic. To him safe means possibility of attacks. Because as much as handing nuclear abilities to Iran's regime is safe, the same way having attacks in New Jersey, New York, and stabbing going on in Minnesota is safe to him. But I will go back to what I always been saying for the last 8 years. Everything he says is a lie. He has not said a word of truth for the last 8 years. I mean, I don't know if maybe he didn't do it before that either, but I just didn't know him back then. He is so good. Look, every time there's an attack, what is the first priority for Obama? Let me be clear, this has nothing to do with Islam. Love our Muslim refugees. This is the first thing. Before he even goes out with the concern for the people who suffered or if, God forbid, anybody died, that's his number one priority. And his whole mission is to basically bring Islam to America, which I would say, unfortunately, he has done a great job so far.
Dr. Sebastian Gorka has written a book called Defeating Jihadism, and he said on the Sean Hannity show, when Sean was asking him, how could he not care about our safety? And Sebastian said it's because of his New World multiculturalism ideology. And in his mindset, as you pointed out with lying to us, in his mindset, this is a no-brainer. This is what we need. America needs to be Islamicized, because in his idea, this is his plan, this is his purpose, to break down the borders of our safety and let everyone in, because it's all part of his ideology of New World multiculturalism. And in that worldview, it doesn't matter about their background. We're all one, and there is no terrorism in his mind.
And in another thing in his mind, the reason I easily say his mind is, to me, the way his mind works is the same as mullahs and imams and ayatollahs in Iran. Couple of terrorist attacks are needed in order to normalize Islam for people here. And the day after the attack, I actually did a video, and I was very upset. I complained to my fellow Americans saying, why is it so normal to you now? Why are you not all freaking out. It's been happening so much that it's becoming more and more normal. And that's part of the plan. Obama's not going to make a big deal out of it because that's the whole point. Let's make it a normal act in America.
Unreal. Well, I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing right now, and it's so humanitarian. So we're talking about Obama's a general. I want to just shift our focus to some real, very special humanitarian things that you're doing with the Live Up to Freedom Foundation, I call it. And you are going out public to rescue people from the nightmare of Sharia law and from radical Islam and what it's doing to destroy our nation. And you have a special campaign going right now. It's called the Hope and Healing Campaign with an individual. He's an Iranian political prisoner in exile, and his name is Afshin. And I want you to talk to our listeners about who Afshin is, how you got to know him, and what you're doing and what we can do to bring freedom to Afshin.
Absolutely. Well, Afshin is a 25-year-old young Iranian man. I know him through his humanitarian works. Back in the time, before he was arrested in 2009, he was very active as far as informing us of all the political prisoners who were being arrested or being executed or whatever their sentencing was. He was one of the people who was arrested on Green Movement back in 2009. For his activities. However, his case got a little complicated because they accused him of muharabah, which means waging war against Allah. There was no proof to this day. There has not been a single shred of evidence against him. The only thing they have against him are the letters that he wrote to humanitarian organizations outside of Iran, informing them of the status of political prisoners. Now, to his own words says that, I don't understand why that is a crime when I'm fighting for humanity. But we, all of us, those of us who know Islam, well, obviously Islam is against humanity. So when you're pro-humanity, you're against Islam. So you get to where Afshin is. He was sentenced, first he was sentenced to execution. Thankfully, it was overthrown and turned into 25 years of internal exile in Iran. He actually developed colon cancer inside the prison. He was only 17 years old when he was transferred to prison. He was completely healthy, and in prison he started developing different illnesses, including colon cancer. He was denied medical treatment. We were receiving reports that he's vomiting blood. He's having digestive issues. He was in a very bad shape. So what we did, including myself, we put together a petition requesting immediate medical attention for Afshin. On July 2016, finally it worked. They issued a medical leave for him. And as soon as he was transferred to the hospital, we had a group standing by to just grab him and take him outside. It did happen, so he's not back in prison. However, now he's a fugitive. And basically, God forbid, if he's captured, well, his fate will be unknown. I mean, it is known to some of us, but at the moment, what we're trying to do is to gather enough funding to be able to transfer him to a safe country. We do have a campaign up. This morning, actually, I woke up to great news that we have reached 50% of our campaign. So halfway there, the campaign is on GoFundMe.com. Look for Hope for Prosecuted. And you can find his campaign. I have always been saying every dollar literally helps, because if 10,000 people would donate a dollar, we would reach our goal about a month ago. And he would be saved. And one thing everybody needs to remember, Afshin isn't just fighting Islam at the moment. He's also fighting the cancer. He's been struggling with it for almost 4 years. yesterday I received the news that he needs a surgery as soon as possible or we will lose him. So I don't know how, what are the words to use to show the urgency of this case, but he needs us ASAP. We don't have much time because, as I said, it's not just Islam and the Iranian regime that he's fighting. He's also fighting a colon cancer, which is very advanced because he wasn't given treatment while in prison.
And this is the plight of all political prisoners behind the Iron Curtain of Iran. They are denied medical treatment, and it becomes a kind of silent execution when they're denied this treatment. So much disease rampant, no medical treatment, and now Afshin needs our immediate support and our prayers. And in fact, Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller have been very active, Annie, in getting his story out there as well.
Yes. Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer, and Dr. Jamie Glazov all joined me on this mission. They have been active getting the story out. Robert Spencer did an actual video about his background and his story. And that's actually, as much as it's a great blessing, at the same time it's putting him in more danger, because the more of us kafirs getting behind him, the more of an enemy of Islam he's becoming. So it's literally, I can't tell you how urgent this whole case is. We need to get him out as soon as possible before they get their hands on him. Because this time, well, we don't need to worry about the cancer too much. They're going to make sure to take him where nobody can find him ever again. And as I said, he's only 25 years old. And this man has been tortured in most horrifying ways. He has been raped. He has been sodomized. Uh-huh. And not by cellmates, no, by the people who were basically interrogating him to get a confession out of him. For those of your listeners who are not familiar with how the system works in Iran, there are no laws, there are no regulations. You get a confession out of somebody in any shape you can. He has lost his hearing because they basically pushed a screwdriver into his ear. This is what he endured already.
It's horrible. Now, Annie, as you say these things about and describe what they have done to him, this week, the president of Iran is right here being welcomed on American soil. Thankfully, there are thousands of Iranian-American protesters in New York that are making us aware of what really Rouhani represents. But as you describe the things that are done to him, yet we are welcoming the president of Iran to the United Nations. That's just horrifying. The world needs to know how people like Afshin are being treated.
Well, here's the thing. At the end of the day, again, I go back to where Obama doesn't really care for people. Either American people or Iranian people or European, doesn't matter. The agenda is to turn America to Islam. This whole politics they're playing, this whole allies of Iran. When, you remember, Randy, as soon as the Iran nuclear deal started, I was the first one to put up a petition against it. And my whole point was, how can you lift sanctions when I know every day there are people in prison and there are acts against human rights every day going on in this country? I'm not going to believe for a second that Obama or his administration don't know what's going on in Iran. They know exactly what's happening because we've been pretty active. We've been putting it out there, like yourself. You have been dedicating your life to Rehana's case. I know they know, but they just don't care. They simply don't care. And worse than that is that we have the leftists who are entertaining the idea. They are all about taking down America as we know it and rebuild their so-called heaven. You see, we are fighting the government, the corruption in government, and then we have to fight the leftists with their completely twisted mentality of not understanding what you're talking about is impossible. You're all living in a little bubble that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. You actually bring up a good point, a very good point about this whole agenda. You have a book you've been reading called United in Hate, written by Dr. Jamie Glassoff, which talks about these countries we are supporting are united in one thing, death to America, hatred to America. And it really has to be just difficult for you as an Iranian American to look at what this country, the bastion of freedom, is turning into.
To be honest, it's not hard. It's just beyond, like, I can't believe it. Every day I'm getting more and more afraid, and I'm willing to admit this. I am afraid of tomorrow. I'm literally looking at history repeating itself. Anybody who knows about Iran before the Islamic Revolution can understand why I'm afraid of what's happening tomorrow. This is exactly how it all started in Iran, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep trying to tell people, exactly, and I keep trying to explain to people that, listen, it's time to wake up, like, now, because if you wait until tomorrow, another attack is coming, another group of Muslim refugees are going to come in, and all I get in return, you're full of hate, you hate Muslims. No, I don't hate Muslims. Mm-hmm. I got issue with Islam. By definition, whomever mm-hmm. follows Islam is a Muslim, so just do the simple calculation. I don't hate anyone. Well, I do.
Mm-hmm.
You can put Khamenei and Khomeini on that list for sure. But I have nothing
yes.
against people. My problem is Islam, anywhere Islam goes, hell follows. There
yes.
is no happiness. You talk to any of the political prisoners, they will tell you. And by the way, I even say it's wrong to use the term political prisoner because they're religion prisoners. Their crime is always mm-hmm. against Islam. So I actually use this against them sometimes, saying if you're calling them political prisoners, doesn't that mean Islam is an ideology and not a religion? Because being against it makes uh-huh. you a political prisoner. But you talk to any of them, they will tell you Islam is all about misery and destroying humanity and destroying happiness. And we're sitting back watching it happen. I'm not there. I don't live there. But I do hear from a lot of people in Dearborn, Michigan, that it's getting worse and worse every day. It's just a matter
yes.
of time until every other city and every other state turns into that.
Exactly. Well, and you have firsthand experience with how you were treated in Iran by the Islamic ideology. And I wanted to just also mention, since we're talking about the issue of Afshin, you have a great example of how people are treated that disagree and post things on Facebook about Islam. You helped a Bosnian journalist who was threatened online for simply posting about her disagreement about the Islamic dress like the burqa or the hijab. This is a very good point to make since we're describing the hatred here. Tell us about this Bosnian journalist that you helped and what happened to her.
Well, her name is Lila Čolak. She was a reporter, journalist in Bosnia. And what she did do was she made a post on her private profile on Facebook, just making, you know, her own opinion about hijab, or basically disagreeing with forcing hijab on women. This post got out, became public, and within a day or two, it didn't even take years or months, within a day or two, she started receiving death threats, rape threats. It got to the point where members of Bosnian army publicly put out rewards saying, we will pay. If you catch her, rape her, and kill her, we will reward you. So I was contacted regarding her case. I came across her story on I believe the first time was because I'm always checking out Pamela Geller's website. I saw it on her website that the Bosnian reporter is being, you know, in hiding for such a thing. It came across my desk. I contacted her, and the first time I spoke to this young woman, you could hear the fear and frustration. All she had to say is, what did I do? Why are my people, Bosnian people, are saying find her, pour gasoline on her, and put her on fire, and then run her over by a car. Why? I mean, listen to the sentence, Randy. It is as inhuman as it gets. How can you imagine, even imagine doing such a thing to a person? Because she just said something against hijab? I just want to add this sentence. Everybody out there who keeps saying Islam is a religion of peace, listen to her story. You can go to Glazov Gang YouTube channel. We were able to transfer her to a safe location. We do have another campaign up for her because it's a long process. It's not just grabbing her and putting her somewhere else. We still have to get her life going. We have a campaign for her up. But you can go and listen to her video. She just released her video telling her story. You can listen for yourself. The things that this young woman had to hear just because she had an opinion and is not far from us either. Look, we do have a bill right now trying to get us to not be able to talk against Islam. It's not there yet, but it has started.
Yeah, I saw the video you're referring to, and I saw the terror in this young, beautiful girl's eyes, and she was wearing glasses, and she couldn't hide it. She was just frantic to think that all she did was disagree. And this is what we're inviting in our country. This is a group of people, an ideology that is opposed to our Constitution, that is opposed to our democracy. And if people like the one you just described, if we were to disagree and publicly post something about Islam, this is the same threat that we would receive. And this is terrorism.
It is, exactly. And here's another thing about it. The mayor of London already made it clear. Any Londoner who criticizes Islam online will be arrested for blasphemy. London, UK, like, when I read the article, I'm like, wait. I started calling it London Islam since yesterday. I'm like, okay, London is gone. It's gone. There aren't many safe places left anymore. To be honest, what I say today is even in America, you're only safe inside your house. That's all there is. There is no more safety even in public places. Look at what happened at the mall in Minnesota.
Right.
There is no safety. It's all terror. When I did my video, I did say that. I said, I'm not a parent. I don't have kids. But I can only imagine what parents are going through, because one of the biggest, you know, the population that go to malls a lot are kids, teenagers. You constantly have to worry when is the next time that they're going to either be stabbed, they're going to be blown into pieces because a bomb went off. And, yeah, as you said, Obama goes and say, we're living in a safer place, right?
Crazy. What planet is he living on? What I heard him say that statement, and I just sat there. I was froze and looking at the TV screen. I said, what planet are you living on? Well, I have a special little treat for you, Annie. You didn't know anything about this, but you've done so much really good work for these campaigns. And I want to play for you just about a minute and a half, Afshin saying thank you and to so many people who have enriched his life. I want you to hear, and our audience to hear, Afshin. He's speaking through an interpreter, but he has some very kind words to say to us this morning. Let's listen.
Hello, and greetings to you all. My name is Afshin Sohrabzadeh, a former political prisoner from Iran. I would like to thank everyone who has been supporting me for the last 8 years. I would like to say a very, very special thanks and appreciation to Inez Cyrus, who has been extremely supportive. Although we've never met, she has gone above and beyond to save me from the oppression I have faced. I cannot find words to show my gratitude, but my hope is to one day meet her in person and to pay her back with all I can do to help her with the humanitarian work she does. I would also like to thank Pamela Geller, Dr. Jamie Glazoff, and Robert Spencer. Although we've never met, they've done so much in supporting me. They've been a light in my darkness. My hope is to one day do as they do and save others as well, and to pay them back for everything they've done for me. I cannot find the words to say how I feel.
Well, I know that has to touch your heart like it touches mine when I hear the words of this man, this very young man who is battling on two fronts against Islam, the Iranian regime, and then colon cancer. Your thoughts on what he said, Annie?
Oh, I wish I knew you were about to play that so I would get my emotions under control. Sorry. I actually, I have spoken to him many times. And I would like to actually share something with you that he said 2 days ago. As we were speaking, he said, listen, Aynaz. As we're speaking Farsi, he calls me Aynaz. She said, listen, Aynaz, I want you to know, even if I die tomorrow, because of what you've done, I will die a happy man. Because they didn't win. I won. I got to tell my story. And you got it out there. So I don't mind dying anymore because now everybody knows who they are and what they've done.
Mm. Wow, what a beautiful man he is.
Exactly.
Wow.
And one more thing you need to know, even though he'd been through all that torture, by the way, they never got a confession out of him. He stood strong and he said, I didn't do anything wrong. I will do it again and again. And again, until the very last day, he never broke, never. And that's why I think we have to do anything and everything we can to get him to safety and give him a chance to live a life he deserves.
I completely agree with you. One more time where we can go and help out Afshin. It's on my Facebook page, but tell us one more time where we can go and help Afshin and help the Bosnian girl. What can we do?
Absolutely. Both campaigns are on my website, liveuptofreedom.com. But if you want to go directly, you can go to gofundme.com/hopeforprosecuted for Afshin. And for Lila, you can go to gofundme.com/LUTF mission. These are the direct links, but they're also available on my Facebook and on my website, liveuptofreedom.com.
Excellent, excellent. Every time you come on the program, I'm just so inspired and educated because you are doing so much for your people in Iran. And like I've said so many times before, Annie, as an American, you really love your country. It's so obvious the way that you reach out and you are sounding the alarm for our freedoms. I want to thank you once again for bringing attention to these very, very beautiful people who need our love, support, and prayers.
It's always, always, I look at it as my duty. But thank you so much for acknowledging that. I appreciate it.
And thank you so much for being a guest, and you're always welcome here on the Cross in the Desert for whatever cause you have. I want to thank you for taking time out today and making us aware of Afshin, and I cannot remember her name, the Bosnian lady, but we're going to do everything we can on this program to bring them to freedom.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Annie, for dropping by today. That is my good friend Annie Cyrus, who works hard at helping humanity. And please go to the website at Live Up to Freedom. Please go to GoFundMe.com. Let's do everything we can in prayers and giving to bring these people to freedom. They will be the hardest working Americans in the world. Trust me, Iranians really, really are. Well, right now I want to shift gears and I want to introduce you to a group that has blessed us in the contemporary Christian music scene for many, many years, the last 15 or 16. I'm talking about Casting Crowns, and they have a brand new CD out called The Very Next Thing. And right now on the Cross in the Desert, we're going to get a sample of their new music. This is Casting Crowns and The Very Next Thing. Let's listen.
Spend all my time dreaming what the future's gonna bring. And all of this time, there's a world passing by right in front of me. Set my sights on tomorrow. Well, I'm tripping over today. Who says big things are somewhere off in the distance? I don't wanna look back just to see all the times that I missed it. I wanna be here and now, starting right here, right now. With the very next words, the love to be spoken. My very next step, be on a road that was planned by you. Lord, wherever you're leading me, that's where I wanna be. With the very next word, love to be spoken. To the very next heart, shattered and broken.
Special album here. I wanted to go ahead and talk to you a little bit about this album, and let's read a little bit about Casting Crowns. It's their 15th release, their 8th studio album since their debut release in 2003. And the very next thing is full of intimate songs as well as upbeat, fresh-sounding tracks that will meet the listener with lyrics that impact with a strong message song after song. Mark Hall says, we are all in different stages of next. There's a next step from where you are right now. We all feel like there's a stage that we have to reach to move on to, which is next. But God has you right here now for your next. And all of these songs touch on that idea. So this is new music from Casting Crowns, and we're going to hear some more music right now from the very next thing. Here is One Step Away.
If you could go back and relive one day of your life all over again and unmake the mistake that left you a million miles away from the you once knew. Now yesterday's shame keeps saying that you'll never get back on track. But what if I told you you're one step away from surrender, one step away from coming home. doesn't matter how far you've gone. Mercy says you don't have to keep her running down the road. You're on. Love's never met a lost cause. Your shame, lay it down. Leave your ghost in the past, but you know that you can't go back. But you can turn around. You've never been more than one step away from surrender. One step away, lay down your old chains. Come now and take up your new name. Your best life up ahead now. You one step away, lay down your old chains. Come now and take up your new name. Your best life up ahead now. You one step away. Just one step away.
Some great new fresh music from Casting Crowns from their newest CD, The Very Next Thing. They're going to be embarking on a fall tour with Matt Mayer, who will be with them also, and it should be a great fall tour. One more song from their new release. This is something called Oh My Soul. Casting Crowns right here on The Cross in the Desert.
There will be dancing, there will be
music from Casting Crowns, really fine compositions from a band I one day want to see and meet. And they have so enriched the Christian world with their very biblical lyrics. I want to talk a little bit about, in these class closing minutes of the program today, something that is near and dear to my heart. And that is the books that I write. The books that I write to be a voice for Iranians. And my latest publication, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, is becoming a voice all over the world. I'm so grateful for those in Europe and in the Far East purchasing the book and becoming educated about Rahane's case and her plight for freedom, as she is the symbol for most every Iranian woman all over the world, what she suffered through. Just like Afshin, she never, never gave up. She never, never gave in to their forced confessions when they tried to force Rahane to say that she wasn't raped. Just say, you were not raped, Rahane. She refused. She was as strong as a mountain, just like Afshin. You know, next month, it's coming so soon, right upon us, October 25th. In just a little over a month, it will be 2 years since her execution. And we're going to do something very, very special once again here on the Cross in the Desert to light a candle and to make her voice be heard all over the world in the plight of Iranian women. We're going to do something, again, very special for Rahane this year on the Cross in the Desert. But as I listen to Annie describe the inhumanity, the inhumane things done to Afshin, we can't fathom that, can we? We can't understand that. How do we best understand what these prisoners go through in torture? Maybe we don't want to know because it's just too strong. It's just too hard. It's just too stressful. My good friend Payman A. Sabet, who is an Iranian Christian refugee living in Malaysia, has written just what I think is one of her best pieces, stories, about what it feels like as a prisoner about to be hanged. I've read this before, but this pertains so directly to today. I'm thinking of the protesters in New York talking about the executions in Iran, making the world aware of who President Rouhani is, what he represents, and what that regime does to people. 2,700 executions that has happened under his watch. What I want to do, I want to bring us into the world of those prisoners today that feel this pain every second of their imprisonment. And this is a story by Payman A. called The Prisoner. I'm going to read it word for word. I want you to just set aside some time. I want you to feel this and to feel the emotion of what these Iranian prisoners go through. I warn you, it's graphic, but we need to sometimes feel that to understand what they go through. And here is Payman A's story, The Prisoner. Door. Next time that you groan with your metal sound to open, you will open to my death, the death of my body. My soul was killed tonight. The dirty marriage killed me. Tonight that you opened for me to exit, I did not think that a nightmare worse from death was waiting for me. I did not know that I would be the most pitiful bride in the world. I wish you never opened tonight. I wish you open again. I wish the long hours pass soon and my body be hanged, this dirt of my body and soul be cleansed. The first time, door, when you opened, I don't know how many endless days ago, I thought this solitary cell would be the end of the world. It is, but not the very end. There was something worse than this solitary and death waiting for me. This dirty, imposed, so-called forced marriage is the most terrible thing in the world. Like all other things, like my confessions to the crimes I've never committed, like being tortured to sign my confession, like breaking my hunger strike by feeding me from the content in the toilet, by hanging me by hands with your knees and boots, like telling lies to my family, being cruel to my family to protect them, like telling lies on TV, admitting how guilty I am when I am not, like confessing to having relationships and communication with people who I've never have seen and putting their lives in danger. The first time door you opened to welcome me, I was really scared. Scared of you. Scared of death. Scared of the noose. Scared of the rope. Scared of everything. Scared of darkness. Scared of the grave. But now I am numb. I have no feeling. No fear. Now I'm looking forward to death. I don't want this dirty life anymore. Full of offense. Full of humiliation. Full of beating. Full of dirty guys, full of nasty words, dirty hands, nasty touches, tiredness, darkness, solitary, enmity, threat. I don't want this dirty life anymore. I want this intolerable nightmare to stop. I tolerated all these unbearable things, but now all I want to do is sleep. Sleep. Since they kept me hanging and slapped me when I fell asleep, I wanted to sleep. I have dreamed of sleeping since they forced me to stand all night and poured water on me when I dared to fall asleep. Last month, they flogged my body. Tonight, they flogged my soul. Tonight was extremely painful. Oh, Dor, you have more than empathy for these men. Your ears hear better than these men. I want to sleep. I prefer to talk to you. I don't want to talk to human beings anymore. I don't want to hear any human voice anymore. I just want to rest, to sleep deeply, to sleep death. I don't want to hear the sound of that metal door anymore, the sound of other prisoners crying. I just want to die. The things I've gone through, they're just beyond imagination. I was once just a simple girl, loving people, having a simple life. Suddenly, I'm thrust into the courts with unfair judges, injustice, nasty words I hear every day, nasty guys offending me. It's too much for me. The dirty hands touching me, beating me every day, the legs and knees hitting me. It's just too much for me. I don't deserve this. I never thought I would be chained to my own bed in the hospital like a dangerous murderer. And I didn't even have the energy to speak. I never thought I would ever put my family at risk for loving people, for defending their rights. I never imagined I had to admit to a crime that I'm not guilty of committing and have to pay such a price and death for it, to be forced to confess on TV. This is the way they've made me famous. When I wanted to be a famous journalist, not a criminal, they have ruined my life, my families, to everyone who will meet me. My life has been ruined. Now I just want to die. I look forward to the time that I won't breathe anymore. I love the time when God will hold me in his arms. But what if God punishes me because of all the lies I've had to tell, all the dirty confessions, all the pain I've imposed on my family, to others, to my mother? Well, what is she doing now? They didn't even allow me to say goodbye to her. God's going to punish me for all the pain I gave to my parents and sisters. Sorry, Mother. I wanted to defend humanity, but I was not even able to protect you. I gave all the pain of those human beings to you, Mother. I didn't intend to hurt you or anybody else. Oh, Mother, it's just so dark here. I don't even know what color the walls are. Oh, Father, your big, kind hands always held me, always protected me. Father, whenever you opened the door to inner home, you brought me the promise of warmth and joy and security and happiness. But during the days in this jail, whenever a door opens, there is a message of cruelty and torture that awaits me. I hear the sound of footsteps. They're coming to take me. I'm scared. I don't want to die. I really don't. I don't want this door to open. I really prefer to stay in the darkness forever and really not to die. Father, please help me. Mother, where are you? Wait a minute. I must be strong. Be strong, girl. You are strong. Don't show your fear to these strangers. The women, they're taking me to the noose. They're very scary. And they're covering my eyes. No sympathy. But I really don't want your sympathy. But at least can you say something to help me? These women, they're the messengers of death. My shoulders, they're shaking. I don't want anybody to see me shaking. My legs, don't shake. Just 1 minute. Please. No pain. I'm scared. Is it painful? Is the rope painful? Oh, God, just give me a heart attack. Please just take me now before I see the rope. I don't want to die hanging. I don't want to struggle for my next breath. God, I'm afraid. Father, mother, I'm afraid. I have this strange feeling. My lips are shaking. Wait a minute. It's just better to pray. Let them see me praying, not shaking, not being frightened. Be strong. It will end soon. My neck, it hurts. My throat, it hurts. It's going to be terrible to struggle for the last breath with tied hands. God, please kill me before the rope touches my neck. I don't want to seem weak. I'm climbing steps. These must be the last steps. I can't believe that. Oh, God, this rope is too thick. Oh, God, I feel like I'm in hell. Stop it. Finish it soon. Is it possible they changed their decision and let me live? My mother, I can see you crying. My father. Oh, God. Payment A for writing so graphically, so passionately, for not sparing words for our comfort, for being graphic, for explaining it how it is. Do you think we need to hear this? Is it really necessary? Yes, it is. What I want you to do today, I want you to go to my Facebook page, and I want you to go to the GoFundMe and to the Hope and Healing Campaign for Afshin and the Bosnian girl. Please give heartily. Everything that you give is going to be a step for freedom for Afshin. It is going to his freedom. And when you hear a story about a political prisoner about to be hung, a woman, and you hear just the fear, the torment, and the agony, please don't turn away. Afshin has a two-front battle against an Iranian regime that wants to kill him and against cancer that has invaded his body. So please go to my Facebook page. This radio broadcast, this campaign will be up there every single day until we meet our goal, until we can one day actually give the biggest hug in the world to a man who has suffered so much, and all he wanted to do was to be a voice for those that are hurting and to let us know what goes on behind the Iron Curtain of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Hillary Clinton has supported this nuclear deal. We cannot afford and allow her to be president. So when you go to the polls this November, remember people like Afshin. Remember people like my dear friend Payman A and my friend Maral in Germany, all of them, that if Hillary becomes president, they will likely never see freedom. This is how very important this election is. This is an election of national security. We have got to stand up for our freedoms. This is not being alarmist. This is being truthful to what reality is. And so I want to thank once again my dear friend Anaz Ani Cyrus from Live Up to Freedom for being a guest on my program today. and for Payman A. Sabet for writing beautifully and passionately what it's like for a prisoner to hang. I want to thank all of those in the chat room who stopped by to listen to the program today. Go to my Facebook page and let's give generously to the Hope and Healing Campaign for Afshin. God bless you. I will see you next Monday on the next Cross in the Desert. Have an awesome weekend.
Oh, glory, glory.